tech we trust. It's the people in charge we're not sure about.
Hi, everybody. This is the In Tech We Trust podcast, episode 104. I'm Mark Farley.
And I'm Eugene Porter de Leon.
And I'm Rick Vanover.
And we've got a bunch of interesting things to talk about this week. By the way, before we start, you know, we started a new format last week, and some people didn't like the fact that we didn't have a lot of banter. So we're going to have a little bit of banter this week. And I'm just going to say, I was at the SNEA, Storage Developers Conference, and it was really great. There is so much stuff going on with NVMe and persistent memory, and they've also got a new management platform called Swordfish, which is based on Redfish. And I haven't been to a SNEA Developers Conference or a SNEA show where I've been so excited in a long time. And I'm starting to think, you know, the storage industry that looked like it was maybe getting run over by everything else, it's got a lot of new life. So I was really excited to be there. How'd you guys' week go?
I had a great time this week. And the SNEA, is there a nice community built up around there? They've got like the bloggers table and everything. What happens at that that SNEA conference? I've been curious.
Well, no, it's a developers conference, so it's a lot of geeks walking around and they're talking about code. And when you go up to somebody's table, to see a demonstration or something, they're showing actual code. So it's not social. It's not super social.
You mean it's like a bunch of smart people actually getting work done? That doesn't resonate with me. I'm sorry. What happens?
Yeah, well, last night I guess I stayed up and drank some beer and wine, and there were a bunch of us up in one of the suites, and that was kind of fun.
Oh, nice.
So there was that social aspect. And so one of the tech chairman there, Mark Carlson from Toshiba, he's a brewmaster. He makes his own beer, and he broke out a porter and a barley wine and some of his homemade wine. So that was really a lot of fun.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. For those of you who can't see us, of course, I've just given Mark a bottle of my homebrewed Belgian. It's a Belgian double for his birthday. So yeah, happy birthday, Mark.
Thanks, Eugene. It's got a nice red ribbon on it, and I am looking forward to drinking it. Although I probably won't have it right now. A lot of times when we record the podcast, you know, we have a little beer. Not today.
Well, it's also at room temperature, so I wouldn't suggest drinking it.
And besides, we're in your office.
Oh, there's lots of beer drinking in them.
That's right. Hey, Rick, so how was your week?
Oh, it's been hot and heavy here in Ohio. I'm getting a lot done. I like that. But I like your comment about going up to the suite and drinking beer and wine. You know that saying that beer and wine, you'll be fine. You sound good after all that.
I sound better than I feel, Rick. Hey, so let's get into the topics this week. This week, besides the SNEA Storage Developers Conference, I think the one that everybody saw was Oracle Open World, and Oracle went to open that by presenting pretty good numbers last week. Their sales for cloud actually looks like they've got some business there. And, you know, Larry Ellison has been making comments about taking Amazon on, which a lot of people found pretty laughable, including myself. I'm just kind of curious what you guys think of what Oracle was trying to accomplish this week at Oracle Open World, if you saw any of the articles about it and what your thoughts were. How about you, Rick?
Well, I've always thought that Oracle will be the dark horse cloud. I think we coined the term on a previous episode. I was spot checking a few things. A lot of their price points are the same as Azure. There's one thing I was looking at. It was 10% more cost effective with Amazon on big scale. That adds up. It, you know, if you're looking at 1 gigabyte of something, that's not a big deal, but terabytes it is. I am absolutely watching this. I'm not counting Oracle out at all. And, you know, in this space, you do have to make bold claims. And Oracle's got enough zeros after the bank account numbers to do that.
Well, I have to say that Larry and the Oracle Cloud team probably are pretty frustrated because one of those things that you just mentioned, Rick, which about don't count them out, Gartner apparently is counting them out because they're not included in their magic quadrant, and citing one of my favorite lines of Gartner, which is Oracle also does not have enough market share to qualify for inclusion, or does not meet the required elements for inclusion in the magic quadrant. So it's that's got to burn him a little bit when he's talking about taking on AWS and being bigger than Salesforce Cloud, but still can't make it onto the Gartner magic quadrant. That's got to be tough.
Yeah, and they probably didn't have a way to include Exadata as a service, right? Which is one of the things that Oracle's talking about. And it's a little bit of a mind bender there, or laughable, one or the other, right? Exadata as a service, big pieces of hardware, but apparently that's what they're doing, is they're putting their large enterprise machinery up in the cloud so people can run Oracle workloads on it. And they probably will have customers that do that. You know, it's not the cheap and deep type of cloud infrastructure that everybody else has, but if it works for Oracle, it works, and if it does, there'll be no denying they have business doing it.
And if they can get take it off, I mean, they're really about I/O, and they're really, you know, offering 28 and 512 gigabyte and 36 core, you know, dense I/O shape, which is what they're sort of reporting, and really talking about what are they advertising? 10x input-output capacity as compared to AWS. And so, I mean, they're really looking at, you know, providing, you know, database in the cloud in, I guess, a way that AWS isn't. I mean, you think that's really going to be their angle? Because, I mean, that's, at the end of the day, isn't that really what it's about? What Larry really wants to do is at least, you know, beat them from a cloud database standpoint.
I actually think mentioning AWS is just a marketing ploy. They're trying to position themselves against the biggest competitor in the business. I don't think they actually think they can compete with the same offerings against AWS. But I think, you know, by going out there and positioning themselves against them, they're trying to draw attention to themselves. And, you know, can you just imagine the meetings between Oracle and Gartner, right? Gartner leaves Oracle off. Just think of the next time the Oracle gang shows up at Gartner, what the temperature of that discussion is like.
Well, I'm sure, and there might be other bits like you know, some bizarre requirement of a criteria. You know, there's a lot of different things that can go into those MQs, and you know, the other thing to watch, friends, is that they change the requirements for these clouds from year to, or these quadrants from year to year, like a criteria. And what I mean by that is there might be one that year is something that includes two different categories. Maybe I'll use a better example, something that is hardware and software coupled together. But then the next year they might say it's only software and it's only hardware. And those are different quadrants. So the cloud is a moving target in its own, but also these quadrants, they do the same thing as well.
Yeah, so they might have shot themselves in the foot a little bit too. Did you guys see that Register article that talked about, you know, the survey they did, the poll that they did live at the event that Mark Hurd ran? This is really funny. Did you other guys see that? Okay, so there's a Register article. We'll include it in the show notes, and it is hilarious. So they did a poll live at the show. And there's this picture in the middle of the article. It's like Mark Hurd looking up at the screen, sort of dumbfounded, and they superimposed the polling results. You know, and so he made a bunch of assumptions, one of which was 80% of IT budgets will be spent on the cloud. You know, do you agree or disagree? It's like 22% agreed with that. It's like,
who are those 22%?
Yeah, who are those 22%? Are they plants in the audience? Is it Larry Ellison voting himself? I mean, does he get more weight? Another one is 80% of large data centers will move to public cloud. That only did a little better. That came in at 23%.
There were survey right. bots in there. He's got some. That's his AI project. Survey bots.
Yeah. Let's see. And one of these was, we will be able to flip the current reality, and 80% of IT spend will be on innovation. Anybody here guess what the number of the polling number is? 80% will be spent on IT innovation.
Who can even understand what the heck that question means, though? Flip the current reality?
Yeah, there might have been problems. Okay, Yadin, what do you think the percentage was?
100%. I'd like to spend 100% of my budget on innovation. That's what I would like to spend. How about you, Mark?
Well, yeah, I'd like to spend at least 50. Respondents there were 14%. Yeah, yeah, 40%. I guess that means that they're not going to innovate. They're going to stick with Oracle non-innovative products.
Right, so that's a positive outcome.
Yeah, yeah.
Oracle non-innovative.
That's right. So that's a positive outcome to that survey. Because if you want to spend 80% of your budget on innovation, you're not spending it on Oracle.
And then the final question D. Oh, Rick, you know, you're looking at this too. The question D was, none of these will ever happen. None of these will ever happen. And Yadin, guess what the number was for that?
I'm 85%, I'm guessing. 85.
Well, you're about twice as much. It was 42%. Whoa. Right, but a lot more people said, you know, no. It's kind of like they were flipping Mark Hurd the bird there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't help but think if the numbers would have been different if Larry had been presenting
yeah,
them.
Yeah, not surprising.
Yeah, I can't.
Yeah.
Maybe if you got up there with, you know.
Well, I gotta pull a flaw here on that survey. I'm all for.
There's a few. Where shall we begin, Rick?
Well, yeah, but I mean, you don't put an option on there that will make it not justify your cause. So by definition, this survey question, which I love live surveys during events. I mean, Gartner does them a lot. They've apparently done it. But you don't put something in there that's, you know, other or no or whatever. You only want people who are of this interest to respond so that it kind of justifies your angle. That option D should have never even been in there, first of all.
But it was. The Survey Monkey got in and messed with Mark.
Like option D, screw you.
Yeah.
One other thing that I found that was interesting actually is that Twitter is laying off around 20 people and shutting down its engineering in Bangalore, India. Now, on the surface, that doesn't sound too significant. I mean, Twitter employs nearly 4,000 people worldwide. So, okay, 20 people in India. How's that a big deal? But what we're seeing and what I'm seeing and actually what's being reiterated by some people I know who are in the Twitter office in San Francisco. Lovely office, by the way. Twitter Jack, if you're listening to this, fine office you have there.
And you've
been there. Oh, yeah. Excellent breakfast buffet, I must say. The log cabin room is my favorite. But anyways, I think there's some good discipline that's being injected to, you know, from the Twitter board and in the executive leadership, and that's running the business more efficiently. I think that's fantastic. But I think some of it is at the expense of execution. And what I mean by execution is really being able to take care of the people who are the men and women who are in the trenches doing the code, doing the project management, and actually getting these products out the door and servicing the users of Twitter. You know, we all are, and we're all hoping that something wonderful will happen. I love the non-inclusion of the image within, you know, the 140 character thing, but what I'm seeing is more than that. I'm seeing more than just this cutting 20 engineers is part of a trend that I'm seeing, like cutting snacks at the Twitter office, which is something that's being quietly done. That there used to be X number of snacks, and now it's kind of dialed back. And pretty soon, you know, breakfast is only served between these hours instead of, you know, more hours. I know.
Dean, you sound like you're like a Twit spy. I mean, well, do you have like secret relationships with people there that, you know, complain about them to you and, you know, in the quiet hours or what?
I talk to people. People talk to me and I talk back to them. We have conversations, but it's normal things that happen. And when you go through enough, you know, business cases, and we do this in those heady schools that they call, you know, business schools, we go through lots of these scenarios in which businesses do pretty much the same thing because there's only a few levers you can pull. And Twitter's pulling some of them right now where, you know, they've under a lot of fire. I think the platform's phenomenal and no one will disagree, but everyone kind of wonders how they're going to monetize and also how they're going to reduce, you know, the cost of how they produce what they produce, which is, I think, a phenomenal product that just needs to figure out what it really is and really what it really wants to be moving forward. And so this article where, you know, they're closing an entire, you know, office in Bangalore, I think is really just sort of an entrenchment where they're pulling back. They're trying to figure out, you know, what they want to do as a core and how much money they're going to spend to do that. And then once they figure that out, and I think there'll be another expansion, hopefully. And I'm sure the stockholders will hope.
Yeah,
so
I don't
as well.
See that happening because they're not growing the user base, right? A couple years ago, they were looking at trying to get 1 billion users. They were around 300 million Right now, they're what, around $350 million. It's just not happening, right? And I think the issue there is that if you're not already on Twitter, you're kind of intimidated to start. It's kind of daunting to come in and start on Twitter. There aren't any easy on ramps there, and sometimes you come in and you run into a super asshole, or you see, you know, the really nasty things that go on there. And I think they've sown the seeds for, you know, people being able to hide, bash each other, and all that. It's hard, right? I do see newcomers every so often on Twitter. Usually they're doing it for some corporate gig, but, you know, everybody else is going to Snapchat or something else instead of getting on Twitter. I think that's really their big problem.
Yeah, growth is always going to be an issue for them. But funny story. Just actually was hanging out with my father-in-law last night, who's, you know, retired and is just now getting onto Twitter. So, Jack, if you're listening, you've got one more user. And he's actively engaged now.
And he's an old guy.
Yeah. But has no idea what Twitter's for. So he asked me last night. He's like, So what do I do with this Twitter? I'm on Twitter now. I'm like, first start out by putting a profile picture on, and then we'll just go from there.
Hey, Rick, so do you see any changes or difference in activities on Twitter in your job?
Oh, I definitely see Twitter as a, you know, an active social network, but I don't see it as a high growth social network. So, I mean, it's a wheel that's been invented and it needs to roll, but nobody's going to go out and reinvent that type of wheel. So when I look at, you know, other networks, those are kind of more appealing right now. And I think that Twitter, I use it a lot, but I go days where I don't. So I don't really have a desire to get on Twitter unless I'm like really trapped somewhere, bored and nothing to do. Then I pull out my phone and just see what's going on in the wild, right? Now people come to me, ask me something, but I really think they need some sort of innovation to kind of get away from like this business news of laying people off. They need something to, some sort of spark or injection of innovation that's going to make it hot and more relevant. Again, it's still relevant, don't get me wrong, but there's got to be something to make it more relevant in the future. Because honestly, the competition among social networks is pretty significant.
Yeah, so are you on Snapchat?
I used to be, but at the request of my wife, given that most of my followers were 20-something-year-old women that I worked with, let's just say that account got closed.
That's almost too much information, but probably just the right amount.
Yeah, I think it got some entertainment value, so I'll leave it to the imagination. Well, some news out of the Microsoft side of the cloud business today, and there's a big one that's very relevant in Europe. In particular, there's a new service region in Germany operated by T-Mobile. So that's a bit, or I should say Deutsche Telekom, T-Systems. I get all the T's mixed up, but in particular, it's T-Systems, which is part of Deutsche Telekom. So the thought is, and any of you who have done business around data in Europe, Germany is a little bit more particular than most, but on top of that, the EU has a pretty complete sense of how data should be stewarded when it comes to privacy data. On behalf of Nigel, I'll use the word. And things like email are very much relevant to that. And when you think about what Microsoft are doing in Azure, one of the biggest parts of their cloud offering is Office 365. So the big thing here is that this co-operated cloud, lack of a better word, is one of those offerings so that organizations in Europe can go forth and do the cloud thing to their liking with, you know, everything operated, as it were, in a German entity with that arrangement with T-Systems and Deutsche Telekom of sorts. So I think that's kind of a big news in regards to the data management aspect of people thinking about cloud offerings. And when you think about Office 365, and in particular the email bit, I mean, I think I heard at one point there are 70 million companies using Office 365, which is a incredible number of people. So
yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah. So from regulated industries or just anybody following the rules, I think they're going to have a better option for the stewarding of their data in these arrangements. So personally, I think it's a big deal of the first flexible cloud, as it were. And then on top of that, I think that it also shows that Microsoft is, changing what they do to market conditions in a very rapid pace. And I we just talked about Oracle and their cloud strategy, but I always like what Microsoft are doing as well. And, you know, you think about one application that everybody can use is email, and especially in the on-premises world, Exchange was so popular. And now having this type of option with Office 365 and Azure, really attractive, and there's already millions of organizations on it. So it's really a big deal. And then when we look at it this way, I think that it's definitely a strategic market move, and probably one that in the long run is not going to be something that you see having the plug pulled on it in a few years.
I want to tease out something that you just mentioned there to make sure that we trademark that, and that's the flexible cloud. Make sure that you coin that term, Rick. Microsoft's flexible cloud.
I come up with them when I can.
But now, I mean, on your point too, that Germany in specific, you know, the GDPR is very strict, and I think if Microsoft is able to thread that needle and provide people with real solutions that allow them to operate within Germany and the EU, within the data protection guidelines of things like the GDPR, they're going to have a winning solution. Because I'm out there in the wild, and people are just scratching their heads as to how they're going to implement the Office of DPO, which is the Data Protection Officer. Now that regulation is just hitting the street. And so I think this is a very, very real need that people have to implement, and they don't have a choice. And if Microsoft gets it right, eventually it'll actually be a solution that people can really sink their teeth into.
You know, so this is kind of interesting when you look at the level of sophistication that Microsoft is rolling out Azure, right? This is a very sophisticated move to have somebody else managing your data space in a country. I don't see Amazon doing this. I don't see Oracle doing this. And to the point, you know, Larry Ellison wants to say that Amazon's lead is over. You know, he might want to talk about Azure. They are so far away from being at the edge where these guys are. You know, you look at all of the services that Amazon has, and you look at the level of sophistication that Microsoft is using to roll out its cloud, and the number of users that it has for Office 365. There's just no way. I'm sorry, Larry. I know I thought we were done flogging Oracle earlier. We're not. Larry,
there's always more time.
Larry, you are smoking so much dope. We better hurry up and get it legalized here in California so you can just go float away on your little private moat, because that's what you're doing.
And Rick, I wanted to throw this out to you. Do you think this is part of Satya's big shift now with Microsoft? And he's been in there for a couple years now. And it really seems like there's actually a real tangible, significant change, both culturally and from a product standpoint. Do you think this is really resonating with customers in the Microsoft ecosystem in general?
Absolutely. I'm convinced that these are top-down innovations, changes that Satya and Nadella have brought in. And, you know, it's one of those things that this is never a Microsoft that you would have seen from Steve Ballmer. And everything from what they're doing with Azure, even with, core products like Windows Server 2016. I mean, I'm loving ReFS. I'm loving some of the, the Hyper-V stuff. I love the Surfaces, which that was kind of started before him. But, you know, there's so much going right with Microsoft that there is absolutely no chance that it is not a top-down initiative. Everything from their Linux, Bash on Windows, you name it. It's nothing but awesome.
Yeah, Satya has made it a cloud-first, mobile-second company. He wants to say cloud-first, mobile-first, but it's pretty clear it's cloud-first, and they're aggressively going after it and doing a bang-up job, it looks like. It'll be interesting to see what their numbers come out like if they break them out separately, but I'm sure they're going to dwarf Oracle.
And this might be good, actually, chance to throw in there, and we can talk about it or not, but one of the other stories that was in the news is how Microsoft has more open source contributors on GitHub than Facebook and Google.
Oh, that was a great story. Really interesting story. Yeah.
And I think that dovetails into the whole idea that Satya is really moving this organization as a whole into into a different direction. And so it sort of, it ranks them, you know, organizations with the most open source contributors. Microsoft is number one with over 16,000. About 1,000 ahead of Facebook, ahead of Docker, ahead of Angular, ahead of Google. I mean, this is, I mean, who would have thought? I mean, definitely under Ballmer, you would not have seen this list as such. But to see Microsoft at the top of the list of most open source contributors, is that just me or is that blowing everybody else's mind?
It sort of blows my mind. Now, the question is, what are they working on? What open source projects? Is it all Microsoft stuff that they turned out or?
Yeah, it's probably not Kubernetes. They may not. But who knows? Actually, they might. They might, actually. I got to drill into the numbers a little bit more.
Yeah, that's really interesting because that's been a quiet change, a quiet sea change. I mean, you think about some of the size of these other organizations. Facebook is pretty big. And they are completely devoted to open source stuff, you know, as is Google. And for Microsoft to go from being, you know, our private stuff, you have to do everything here, to spending, you know, I wonder how much money that represents of developer time, right? That is a significant investment by Microsoft in just the cost of developers.
Yeah. And so I guess I'll throw this out there. Do you feel like Satya is really understanding the value of creating a community-based grassroots ecosystem to support certain products and finding that as the value? Because that's like for, you know, for Docker, for example, that's a huge part of their value prop is creating a robust grassroots ecosystem around the product rather than focusing on selling licensing for a closed source product. Do you think this is a shift of from Satya's standpoint to that? Or this is open source washing?
I don't think it's open source washing. I think Satya is looking at this industry and seeing a lot of change coming along, especially along the lines of analytics and those kinds of things, right? It's the IoT world is going to be huge. He knows that. They need to be good players there. And my guess is he is really trying to shift the nature of the company so more people will like it and want to do business with Microsoft for the next big things that come along. And he wants to be in on the ground floor of those things. Some stuff they've missed, right? And you can argue whether they've missed mobile or not, right? They did buy LinkedIn, you know, otherwise, are they on anybody's phones? Well, Office 365 is, but so they've got a little bit of stuff there, but IoT, they want to be a big player. Machine learning, they want to be a big player. Can they do that on their own by themselves? There's no way. So I think he's being very cagey and understanding that there's a ton of growth left in software and services, and he wants to present Microsoft as the white hat guys.
Microsoft is the white hat guys.
Yeah, I know. Weird.
Sorry. I'm in an alternate reality now.
Hey, so I just want to spend a little bit of time speaking about some of the other changes that are going on in the business, because I mentioned earlier being at the SNEA Storage Developers Conference. Sean Walsh was there, and Sean started a new company called G2M, and Sean has been around the storage industry for ages, and he's watched the rollout of all kinds of interconnects and protocols and all kinds of things. His company, G2M, is focused on the NVMe opportunity. And he has some shocking numbers. He published a report a couple days ago, and it says that basically the NVMe business is going from about zero to $57 billion in total by 2020. And that's all parts of it included. That's servers, memory, storage, you know, all the software and everything with it, but zero to $57 billion in 4 years. And Sean's a pretty serious guy. It's an interesting thing. People may I did a ride cast with Sean on vulcancast.com. People can see it if they want to look at that. And they can download his materials from the Storage Developers Conference also. But that's a sea change in this industry, and that's going to be a really interesting thing to watch. One of the big drivers for that, he says, is the inclusion of NVMe slots on Intel motherboards. that this stuff is going to be ubiquitous, that the HCI people will all use it. The cloud people are certainly going to use it. They're using the small M2 form factor memory cards for their SSDs, you know, not something that fits in a drive slot, not something that looks like a drive, but something that is more like a very small card with chips on it that fits into a slot, and that these are what the cloud, the hyperscalers, they call them, are using. Right, so if you're building massive, you know, distributed systems out of pods, you know, rack pods, and you're just stuffing servers into shelves, the servers inside them are going to have these cards of high-speed persistent memory in them. It is going to change the world.
And this isn't just niche, Mark. This is getting widely adopted. I mean, didn't Samsung just come out with some screaming fast NVMe SSDs?
Yes, they did. And they had their 960 products. They did. That was this week. And SanDisk, I mean, sort of related, but not really. It's not NVMe. SanDisk announced a prototype for a 1 terabyte SD card. You know, you look at where this industry is going. It's really interesting. The thing is, Samsung's is a NAND SSD. What is going to happen with persistent memory is you're going to be able to address it just like memory, at the same speed as memory, and you're going to be able to overwrite it, which, unlike NAND, where you have to have a controller in place that does the erase, rewrite, all of that, the persistent memory, you'll be able to access it directly. And you're going to be able to do it at orders of magnitude faster than what you work with NAND today. Right, so I mean, all of the face melting predictions about what's going to happen might actually happen.
So wait, are you saying then, Mark, that spinning disk is dead?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I spent some time with Tom Coughlin and Jim Handy too, and those guys have been analyzing the disk drive business for a long time, and they think there's a pretty long survival rate for consumer disk, but not performance disk.
Yeah. So I've got the hot or not for this week, and that hot or not is Twitter has officially changed its 140 character limit. Now, I know this is a much anticipated yet not screamingly exciting for some people, so I wanted to get your guys' take on this hot or not. So a little bit of background, doesn't mean that you can start writing 1,000 character Twitter messages and publishing your white papers, you know, in Twitter as such. But it does mean that the links and pictures will not be counted towards your limit, which always frustrated me. I would like, okay, great. I got 140 characters, then I slap a picture in there, and I don't know, it takes up 16 characters, 30, I don't know. How much is, like, it always felt like it was a big mystery.
How many characters is a picture?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Depends on, like, who's in the picture. If you don't like them, it's like, if it's really crazy, a lot of people in the picture, is it more characters? But anyways, so, Mark, I'll start with you. Is this character limit that no longer includes your link or your picture? Is this hot or not?
I think it's not hot. I just need to clarify something though, Yadin. Are they letting you post more than 140 characters?
No, it's 140 characters. It just doesn't, pictures and links don't count against the limit. So if you get 140 characters, you write it out and then you add a picture, it's not going to blow up your tweet.
Okay. Yeah. Well, what about video?
Yeah, no video.
No video?
No, the video is not. I think if it's a link to a video, then yeah, it doesn't count. So it's a link.
But it's still going to be that little crop picture, right? It's going to crop the picture so you can't see the whole thing, and then you'll have to blow it up somehow and all that. I think this is, like, really not hot. You know,
apparently, you don't face that challenge that many Twitter users do.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm trying to put my logo out there for ridecasting now, and so I'm, you know, a headlight gets in there.
Yeah,
I don't care.
Yeah,
I don't care. I just don't think this is hot.
Yeah,
you know, if they want to be hot, they would go to like 150 characters. Now that would be hot.
That would be 150 characters. Well, now it's like if you do a picture, you were going to there. Now you get actually 140 characters of actual text, whereas before you got like 120 or 115 or something like that if you included a picture. So you actually are going, like, you are getting more characters, actual characters.
Yeah. So how's Buffer going to respond to this?
I don't know. I tried to use Buffer. It's funny. I was just using Buffer and Hootsuite this week, and I'm looking at it going, I don't think they know that Jack has made this change to Twitter. I'm frustrated with your platform now. I want my 10 characters back.
Yeah, you know, I wish they would just go back and give their employees longer breakfast times.
Exactly, and more snacks.
Yeah, more snacks for Twitter employees.
Bring
I don't
back
care.
The snacks. Yeah. Because that's the human rights violation here we need to be fighting for.
I said it before. I don't think it's hot.
All right. Rick, what do you think about this?
I think it is barely hot. meaning it's not a big hive.
Ooh.
And because what I think they're doing is they're really expanding the metadata that goes along with the tweet. You've seen this first with geolocation, you know, when you drop the pin and resolve a location. And much like what you're talking about with Hootsuite, Yadine, you'll find it working first in a Twitter app. Okay, so I use both. I use the Twitter app for my personal stuff and Hootsuite for work stuff. And then I use Tweetcaster for my heckler stuff. And it's one of those things that you use these other pieces, links, pictures, location, which isn't part of this change, but the fact that you can still use that 140-character bit with these other pieces of rich media, I do think it's a little bit hot, barely hot. Now, 140 characters has really changed a lot with me, and I will go like very, very deep and philosophical and say that Twitter has actually made me a very effective communicator when I have to explain complicated things outside of Twitter. And what I mean by that is I have somebody, they don't understand what I'm doing, I pretend it's a tweet, and therefore I shorten it, I condense it, and they're like, oh, well, then it makes sense. So, you know, Twitter's really helped me. It's made me, I think, a better writer. But this little bitty tweak to Twitter is using metadata, which I think is kind of good, so it's a little bit hot.
Okay, so we get a little bit hot from you, Rick. All right, I'm going to say, because I'm using Twitter, I kind of started living on Twitter, and literally 2.5 years ago.
It sounds like you were actually living at Twitter with how much information you have, the inside man. I have a cot in Twitter.
Do you know what I love, though? When I was there in the waiting room, because they make you sign like this NDA and like give you like a drop of their blood and stuff before you like get to walk in the doors, the magical doors. They actually have beer in the fridge in the waiting room before you even get into Twitter.
Hey now.
And I'm like, it's like 7. I was like, what was it? I was at VMworld or something like that. It was a couple years ago. And I was like, they're like at some ridiculous. I was there like at 8 in the morning or something like that. But I was like there and I'm sitting there. I'm like, there's a fridge full of beer while I'm in the waiting room at 8 in the morning. And I kind of had a thought going, maybe I do want a fat tire. I don't know.
Yeah, there you go.
You never know when you're going to need that little extra bit of confidence, so they know what's happening. So I like that. That right there is hot.
I can't remember. I'm sure.
All you remember is the beer, right? How about Mountain Dew, Red Bull, anything that's an upper?
Was there anything else that I should have remembered?
Yeah, I think we're talking about hot or not.
Yeah, hot or not. Is breakfast pizza at Twitter's breakfast buffet, is that hot or not? No, but I think the limit change is definitely hot for me because I'm constantly running into the everyday. Just I want to just put just a little bit more in, you know, because there's really a few things you need in a tweet. You need to add, you know, one of them is your voice. It's like it's tough when you get like a link to some content. You got a couple people whose email or whose handles you're tagging in. Then you want to put your voice in there. Actually, you know, say something pithy, but have enough characters left over after you've put a link and a bunch of people's handles in there, and a picture or something like that. And you know, having just a few more, even 10 more characters actually would make the difference.
I thought you were maybe talking about an audio file. It would be an audio icon, so you'd have your whole dashboard up on Hootsuite or something like that, right? And everybody could be talking to you. Like, hey now! You just have a cacophony coming out of your Twitter
imagine
dashboard.
If, that's great. Imagine if tweets could speak.
That's how, what I'm talking about.
How noisy.
What would be a cool innovation for Twitter is where if you mention someone in a reply, that does not consume the 140. Again, the metadata, because that would be awesome. Because I hate when I get into conversations and you only have like 40 characters to work with all the replies. And I need to apologize to Brian Graff yesterday for my little Twitter spat with him. But it's one of those things that I was out of room to reply. So there's an opportunity for a really hot innovation is that replies like a conversation. Because again, there's metadata that knows that a conversation is related to other tweets. Make the metadata cross through and then not take up characters. That would be awesome.
Did you get in a twit piss yesterday, Rick?
I did. I got in a little fight and I feel bad.
Well, see, once you get down to like, you know, having 6 or 7 people on a thread, you know, in a tweet thread, and there's no more space, that's what emojis are for. It gets down to one point where you only have one character left, and it's like you have one emoji. And so the conversation is reduced to emojis.
It's either going to be a finger or a wink.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, everybody, thanks for listening. Send us feedback on In Tech We Trust website and LinkedIn. And where else do we have stuff that people can find us? Oh, Twitter. Yeah. Find us on Twitter, In Tech We Trust. We want to hear from you. Let us know what you're thinking of the kind of new format, how we're doing. Tell your friends. Tell your friends, friends.
Yeah. You feel free to reach out to me at Porter De Leon on the Twitters.
Yeah. I'm Go Farley on Twitter.
And I'm Rick Vanover on Twitter. We're real creative, guys.